The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good evening, Red Sox Nation. We had AJ Hinge and the Tigers maul our Red Sox and Alex Cora. I hate this team. I'm Chris Filico. I've got Jim Dalfino here with me. Jim, how are you holding up right now?
Hey, Chris, how are you? Glad to be here. Look, the bottom line is anybody really surprised that they lost today? I'm not. However, you know, if you told me that you were going to score five earned runs and have seven hits off of Skubal, I would have said, did you win the game? I mean, the bottom line, they were pretty competitive for this game. But you know what? Look, the bottom line here is that we pretty much anticipated this game a loss, which really makes yesterday's game even that much harder. I was really hoping they would at least sacrifice one of these three games. I wasn't really thinking they were going to take a series, but, you know, it's just really a kick in the teeth. You know, you came off of two wins against Kansas City in Kansas City, which has been really tough for the Red Sox over the course of my lifetime. And then to go into Detroit and then just get, like you said, mauled and had your butt handed to you. It's just really, really a downer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack with this game in particular, but before we get there, I couldn't agree more with you. I think the most disappointing part is, like, going into these two series, I think I said that, you know, I'd feel good if they went 4-2, which basically left a loss in one of each, or at least sweeping one of them and then losing two out of three of the other. And realistically here, like, we should have or could have won the last two games of the series, in which we didn't expect the Skubal game. You know, I think, to your point, to get the five runs and have ourselves in that position, just especially after that kick to the teeth last night, just made it that much more disappointing. But am I surprised? No, especially like the way that whole seventh inning, like we make that rally and it looks like we're about to break it open. And I'm saying to myself, we have to break it open if we're going to win this game. We don't. And then shockingly enough, we get ourselves in a position in the ninth inning to kind of do the same thing, and I started to feel good there. And then, you know, Cora interjects himself into this game and starts making some baffling decisions that we'll get into. And then as soon as we didn't get anything out of that, I knew we were going to lose. I was hoping it would at least get to extra innings, but kind of glad they saved me a little bit of time and used some time, Jim. So definitely disappointed, but not shocked to your point. So I think let's just dive in to that ninth inning, because I think it was very crucial to how this game ended up unfolding. What were some of your takeaways and thoughts here?
Yeah, so the ninth inning was the make or to break it. They had the opportunity to win this game in the ninth inning. All right, you start off, you get Navarez win with a base hit. You get Rafael in with a hit. So it's, you know, you got two on. They pinch run Hamilton. And then Duran is up there, and it's a perfect opportunity for him to bunt. I mean, he's 1-for-5 on the night. He's been struggling a little bit. I would have bunted him there. Try to get the runners over, especially with Duran's speed. You know, if you get the bunt down and you force the infield to, you know, work very, very quickly, you don't know. Maybe Duran beats it out. Maybe the ball is thrown away and you score one or two. You know, maybe because they pinch ran Hamilton. Maybe Hamilton's in and then all of a sudden Rafael is on third and you've got first and third and you've got a run in. So I was very disappointed. You know, he did get a sack fly that did move Hamilton over. The problem is that Rafael didn't go. Now, I don't, you know, it's hard to see what the read is on that or what his angle was. So he didn't move over to second base on that play. And then with Rafi up, I don't know what Cora was thinking. I would have had Rafaela moving on that. He should have tried to steal second base. chances are the Detroit Tigers don't throw through on that, because, you know, if they do, Hamilton's probably fast enough to score on that. So they don't do that. And as a result of that, you know, Raffy strikes out, can't get the ball in play to try to get Hamilton home. And so it's just one thing after another. If Rafaela had gotten a stolen base, maybe they go ahead and they walk, you know, Raffy, and then you bring up Bregman with the bases loaded in that situation. But, you know, the whole thing was just not constructed well. And I just don't understand what Cora is thinking in those situations. You should have bunted Durant and you should have had Rafaela in motion. What are your thoughts?
I agree with everything you said. I kind of want to go back and let's kind of like compartmentalize it step by step here from like almost a play by play. So let's start. So Narváez starts it off and gets the hit. And immediately, as soon as I saw David Hamilton coming into pinch hit, my mind goes to, okay, Wong's going to be there defensively in the bottom of the ninth. So like, we have to score here, and probably more than one run, but at least a run. And what didn't make sense to me was, like, I get in theory why you pinch run David Hamilton for the speed. However, chances are, if you're not bunting Rafaela, like, yes, he got a single, but the way he's been hitting and the way he swings, he's either striking out, possibly hitting a home run if he runs into one, or flying out to the outfield, which doesn't move David Hamilton anyway. So that's one part of it. Now he ends up getting the hit, and you're first and second, they don't bunt. Now, to your point, you know, Jaron Duran hits that fly out, and we end up getting David Hamilton over, and I think it's because the outfielder, forgive me, I don't remember who it was, he took a bad step initially, and it looked like the ball might actually get past him. He almost like took a couple, like a weird step back when he caught it, and I think that's why Rafaela hesitated.
Green, yeah.
He was reading to see, like, okay, is this going to get past him? Because he get past him, like, Hamilton scored anyway, and I might get to third, but I'm definitely getting the second at that point. And he just took a bad step. The guy ends up making the catch, and he didn't take an extra step back. He ended up just flinging that ball right to second. So I think kind of Rafaela was stuck in no man's land. But again, like, didn't necessarily have to even be in that situation, because to your point, if we put the ball and we play small ball, which you've been talking about a lot on this podcast, Jim, for the last couple of weeks here, if we just play small ball for a change, you got second and third. You might even have bases loaded, or who knows, you get an error. Hamilton scores. You may end up ending up with second and third on an error at that point, because Jaron Duran forces a play. And we don't end up with that. We end up with the corners with one out, and you get a strikeout, and then they end up getting out of it. And the Sox get nothing. And we all knew what was going to happen at that point. We knew this game was not going to go in our favor. So, I mean, how much at this point, if you had to put a percentage on it, is the percentage of blame going to Cora?
I mean, quite honestly, in my opinion, I probably blame 95% of that inning on Cora, both at the top and bottom of that inning, right? Because obviously, you know, you had Narváez, you pinch ran Hamilton. I don't have a problem with him. You bring in Connor Wong, you know, in the bottom of the ninth, and then he throws it in the center field, which allows runner to advance to third base. And you know, once he gets third base, that it's the home team. They're gonna lose that game right then and there. And I know Cora was trying to see if there was a possibility of him not hitting second base, if there was a hesitation to return to
first. Yeah, it was an act of desperation at that point.
Yeah, I don't blame him for that. You're gonna lose the game in about 2 minutes. So, I mean, I don't blame him for that. But the bottom line here is that, yeah, I'm going to give him about 90 to 95% of the loss. Like I said, you know, he should have had Duran bunting. And if that didn't work, you know, then he should have had Rafaela in motion. So, you know, the thing of it is, though, is that, you know, how do we fix this team? You know, I mean, when you really start looking at everything from, you know, the big idea here, you really needed to make some heyday against Kansas City and against Detroit, two teams that arguably you're fighting against for a playoff spot. And whether Detroit wins the division or not is moot at this point. But it's really sad that the Boston Red Sox, with all the resources they have and the money that they can spend, that you have to be in competition with teams like Kansas City and Detroit. But how do you fix this? Where do you go from here?
Well, for the record, we're now officially two games out of the third wild card position. Cleveland still has the first position. Kansas City is a game and a half out, and Minnesota now officially has taken the third wild card spot. So basically the whole Central's in. The Sox find themselves 1, 2, 3, 4 teams behind that third wild card. What do you do to fix this team? One thing I do want to also point out before we even get to there, Wong, even before we got to that atrocity of someone ending up on third with no outs, was framing strikes as balls, which just goes to show like the detrimental decision of taking Nevarez out of the game, especially with the way he was swinging and the way he was calling a game and framing pitches. I thought he did a phenomenal job, but I think that's the first point, right? It's like, what do we do to fix? I don't want to see Connor Wong play anymore. He's not the starting catcher. He should not be the starting catcher. I want to see Nevarez as the starting catcher for this team going forward. He is our best option. You want to put Wong somewhere in there when it's fitting or when we have big leads or whatever it is. I can't even say in a defensive position because he's a detriment to that point, and so is his bat. So you figure that out. Trevor Story, it's like the same game, same story, no pun intended, every game with him in the lineup. He's an absolute albatross offensively. Yeah, he's an adequate defensive shortstop, but at this point, is he much better than Marcelo Mayer at this point? I mean, remains to be seen, but I can't imagine he is at this point in his career. And I can guarantee there's no way that Marcelo could be worse offensively. There's just no way he could do less. He's going to run into some hits against fastballs and against major league pitching, which Trevor Story can't do at this point. So that's the second thing. And it's interesting, you know, I was listening to Terry and Jason with Matt last night, and Matt's making some good points about the fact of, like, does Jaron Duran at this point really deserve to be taking the spot from Roman Anthony? Like, would Roman Anthony be a better major leaguer in this lineup and for the future of the Boston Red Sox, especially where we are now two games under 500, two out of a third wild card spot with all the hopes and dreams we had? Before that, it was a question. I'm starting to tend to agree with that, Jim, where maybe it's just time you just bring everyone up and we just roll the dice. And you know what? Even if we're not winning, nothing changes, but it gives us hope at this point. What are your thoughts on how we could fix this?
So it really depends on whether this team really wants to win. And I question their commitment to winning. Now, look, I understand you did some moves to bring in guys like Crochet. You brought in Bregman. You know, there's some culture change there. You signed Crochet to a big deal and so forth. But unfortunately, the way you look at outside of Rafaela, you know, you've got basically four hitters that really are anybody that you can count on. Maybe Duran. But, you know, you're looking at Rafi, you're looking at Bregman, Abreu. So the bottom of the lineup is kind of a black hole. You're getting, like you said, nothing out of Story. You know, at this point, I think you're right. I mean, how does Marcelo Mayer not provide you anything close to what Story's providing you? I think what I do is this, you know, stroking of Rafi of Rafi to play first base. If we can get this accomplished, which I don't understand why this is such a drawn out problem, but be that as it may, if we can get him to play first base, and again, I can't believe I'm going to say this, you bring back Yoshida to possibly be your DH. And you DFA Story or put him on an IL stint. You owe Story about $75 million. You probably owe Yoshida about $75 million. There's kind of some kind of wash there, but you're paying Yoshida to basically tour the country on some kind of huge vacation. So get his bat in the lineup. He can probably provide you a better, you know, offensive production than Story can. And you bring up Marcelo Mayer. So Rafi's at first. Campbell's at second, Mayer's at short, Bregman's at third. Yoshida's your DH. As far as your outfield's concerned, whether it be Abreu, Rafaela, and Duran, I'm with you. I don't know how you can get Roman Anthony into this lineup on a daily basis. The other option is to do some kind of rotation with the DH. And that is something where Abreu and Anthony and maybe Rafi moves around. I don't know how. It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder with him.
So it just kind of occurred to me that I believe Duran actually came up as a second baseman at one point. And if that's true, if my memory serves correct, what if we kind of effed around, potentially threw him at first base until we figure out this whole Devers thing long term? Because I think we got to start making moves now. And that opens up the spot for Roman Anthony in the outfield. Because the thing with Yoshida, I like the idea, pending he's healthy. And I've seen these conflicting reports based on the way he's throwing and like a swing and a bat. Is he really healthy? Is it just that they're touring him around the world? I don't know. Remains to be seen. So I'll assume that there's some legitimacy to him potentially not being ready from injury. Duran couldn't be worse of an option. And if he played second base, I can't imagine he can't figure out first, I would think. It's worth at least checking out. And if it creates a pathway for Anthony and we're able to get Mayer at shortstop and we get Wong out of the lineup, like I like our chances a lot better than what we had in this Detroit series.
If you move Duran to second, playing devil's advocate, what are you doing with Campbell?
No, I meant Duran to first.
Oh, Duran to first.
Meaning he came up as a second baseman, but maybe toy around trying to like try him out at first until this Devers thing is figured out. It creates immediate path, which was your kind of question. Because again, I'm going to assume playing devil's advocate that Yoshida might not be ready from injury. Just a thought. I know Daniel Nava did it back in 2013. So,
I mean, there were reports that Yoshida said that he could hit, but he can't throw, which right. kind of has reminiscent of the Bryce Harper situation. But Bryce Harper came, you know, had a larger procedure. You know,
well, they're also two different players too.
Yeah, and they're also two different players, of course. Bryce Harper, I mean, Yoshida can't hold his jock. But the bottom line here is that I think the quickest and most painless answer is going to involve Rafi playing first base, Campbell's at second, Mayer is at short, Bregman's at third, Narvaez is at catcher. And just to make a point, I know the Dodgers just promoted Rushing, their prospect catcher, and they DFA'd. Who was it? What's the guy that they DFA'd their catcher, their backup, Austin Barnes or something like that?
Yeah.
I'd maybe like try to see if I could sign him and then maybe have a platoon of Narváez and him. And I would move Wong. I would DFA him or designate him for assignment, or if he's got an option left. I don't know what his service time is, because if there's too much service time, then they can't get option back. But Rafi, you'd have Campbell at second, Merritt short, Bregman at third, Narváez behind the plate, Rafael in center, Abreu and Duran for the time being. And I would have to wait and see if there's a major injury to bring up Anthony. I just don't see it being a possibility just yet. But yeah. Mayer has to come up. He was 2-for-4 again tonight. He's absolutely destroying AAA pitching right now. There's nothing else for either one of them to, you know, learn in AAA. They're both ready. But the quickest, dirtiest, and simplest solution right now would be Rafi at first and Mayer to short.
No, I don't disagree. And I think, you know, Mayer coming up, it's right now it's a slam dunk. I don't know why it hasn't happened. And to be honest, it's actually a detriment to the team at this point, especially to your point. Like, it only kind of proves the point, like, how committed are they really to winning? Because with Story, you're not committed to winning. And we're not winning. And with all the momentum we had, where we were questioning that for the last 5 years, and then we signed players, which on paper showed this quote-unquote commitment to winning, to the point where John Henry's on, you know, X, Twitter, whatever the hell you want to call it, posting himself smoking cigars like it's 2004 again. But yet the standings still show 2022, 2023, 2024. I mean, we are literally in the exact same position we were last year. You know, I wrote an article on Substack and I had someone comment and they're like, oh, well, the AL is not really weak. It's just not so top heavy. And that might not necessarily not be true, but the point is, same record last year, we were 8.5 back in fourth place of first place in our own division, let alone the third wild card. This season, we're 3.5 out with the same exact record. So the AL is definitely not better. Our division's certainly not better. We're also in second place, not fourth. And I could pretty much guarantee, based off of my recollection, the third wild card position was probably more out of reach last year than it is right now with two games behind with the same record.
Well, you're in third place now because the Blue Jays won. So the Blue Jays are in second place now. So now we're in third.
Still not four.
Third and continuing to fall. You know, this brings back my point. I said this back in the offseason. I said that this is a 78-win team. And I was crucified on Twitter for that. As you can probably imagine, being the heel that I am. Some people said 94 or 96 wins. I won't mention who that could have been. But the bottom line, you know, you're what, a game under 500 right now? So you're on an 82 win pace. And to your point, the American League is not as strong as it probably was last year. The Yankees have their series of injuries to their pitching staff with Cole out. And, you know, the Orioles are a surprise. I think we all expected them to be more of a contender.
Yep.
You know, I mean, obviously they lost one pitcher. And it seems like their entire team fell apart. I'm really shocked that they're in last place. They're keeping it warm for us, but, you know, the rest of the, AL, I mean, the Athletics are a surprise.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's not without the realm of, thinking that they could have really went really hard this offseason and they could have really had a really good team because it's such a weak division and a weak AL. And the fact that they're kind of just treading water right now makes you wonder if they really are a worse team than last season.
Yeah, I mean, the league is definitely where the thing is there's the masking of the fact that there's so much more competition this year. To your point, the Athletics are a surprise. But I think it's more, there's more competition because there's more mediocrity in the league than there was last year. And listen, it wasn't good last year either. We forget for like 2/3 of last year, the Yankees were running away with the American League and the Guardians were doing what they always do, where they give the appearance like they're going to contend. We all know they're going to get knocked out by the Yankees in the playoffs. And then the Tigers had a hot second half to third of the season, finished up strong, but just kind of ran out of gas. This year, now they're the cream of the crop. And, you know, what gets lost in this series, too, like A.J. Hinch deserves his flowers because what he did with the Astros, right? We forget he's championship pedigree, did it when they weren't getting paid. You know, they got a lot of those contracts once he was out and then it was Dusty Baker's team. And then they all broke apart. And him and Alex Cora both came from that same pedigree. And they both had their lumps that they took and they left. And then, you know, he obviously won a championship here, Cora. And then had to take some lumps. But since then, I mean, what A.J. Hinch is doing with the Tigers with even less of a payroll in Detroit is absolutely phenomenal. He deserves all the flowers, all the credit, and it also kind of really highlights and exposes a little bit of Alex Cora since the two's have broken apart and since he won that championship in 2018, which I say you or I could have won, Jim. I'm sorry. I truly believe that, managing that team with that talent. So tons of credit there, but I'll tell you what scares me is we have six games, Jim, coming up against the Braves and the Mets. And the National League, regardless of what anyone says, is a stronger league. It's more top-heavy, and those are the teams that are at that top. where do we go from here heading into that? Like, what is your confidence level? Do we even have a chance? Because let's face it, if we drop all six out of that, this could get ugly real quick.
Yeah, so Friday night is a three-game series back at home, you know, against the Braves. It's going to be Crochet against Sale. I mean, you couldn't write that. The novel writes itself at this point. So it's kind of like the ace of the past against the ace of the future. Then you've got Giolito against Holmes. You know, Holmes is a second-year starter or something like that. He's got about 15 career starts. And then they've actually got penciled in, and I know on ESPN they've got penciled in Hauk against Schwellenbach, but Schwellenbach's been awesome. So I'm not quite sure if it's going to be Cooper Criswell, who was with the team today, or how they're going to rearrange that. You know, again, you're facing competition and teams that you should beat if you are a contender and not a pretender. And if this trend continues, you know, I don't see them winning the series against Atlanta, and I don't see them winning the series against the Mets. Will they take one of three and then one of three? It's always a possibility. Unless there is some kind of surprise, I don't see it happening. Again, today was almost a surprise because, you know, no one expected them to get five runs off of Scooble. So they're trending in the wrong direction. Home cooking is not something that the Red Sox have looked forward to over the last few years. So we can't even say that, thank God we're home. You know, so it's going to be six more tough games. Then you have Baltimore, who always plays us tough, even though, again, we talked about the fact they're in last. And then it's off to Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is a tough team as well. They're no slouch. And then it's the Braves again. So you, and then you got LA and then the Yankees starting in June. So you've got a tough stretch here. And I think by the end of May, middle of June, you're going to be surprised this team is going to be floundering.
Yeah. So the only hope, first of all, I'll ask you a real quick question before I get into my point. Out of the two series, who do you think we have a better chance of taking two from?
The Braves.
Okay. So I would agree. And the Braves, the only thing that we could hold hope on is they've been a terrible road team. Like, they've been actually worse than the Sox. They're 7-15. They're 14-6 at home. To your point, the Sox are like two games above 500 at home, and then 11-14 on the road. But 500 or better records, we have not fared too well against. But I would agree, there's a much better chance of getting two out of the three against the Braves. We may not even get a game in that Met series, to be honest. And to your point, this could get ugly really quick. And I'm going to, let's assume it does. Then what?
Well, I mean, if they surprise us and they go, you know, 4-2 in these next six games, you know, it's still only a game over. I mean, look, if you're going to be a contending team for a playoff spot in the American League, you have to be able to beat the competition that looks and acts like the potential that they are going to be a contender. You know, your Texas Rangers, your Kansas Cities, your Detroits, your Atlantas, your New Yorks, your Dodgers, you've got to be able to play these teams strongly. And they're really not showing any signs of doing that. Let's not forget that they had the weakest schedule to start the season, just about of any team, you know, in baseball. And they were 18-18 or 20-20, whatever it was. And it's just not good enough. And, you know, people try to say, well, it's early, it's early. There comes a point where it's not early anymore. You know, you got to look at the season, you know, the first 40 games and then see where you're at and try to really make a determination if you're a contender or a pretender. Right now, there's nothing that's leading me to believe that they're going to miraculously make a complete change. You know, and if they continue this 500, you know, game up or game down record and continue to putter, you know, come the trade deadline, what are you going to be looking for? You know, I mean, they're going to come back with us and say, Cutter Crawford's coming back. You know, we're going to get Buehler back soon. And you're going to just hear the same old, hot garbage that we've been seeing for the last two or three seasons. Oh, we'll bring up Roman Anthony. So I don't even see them being in the market for anything other than maybe a reliever or something like that, even if they want to add. So look, I don't want to speculate at this point, you know, where we go from here in terms of, you know, castawaying the season. There still is a lot of time left, but I will tell you, by the time we get done with these two Yankee series by mid-June, you're going to know exactly where this team is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think, you know, it's interesting. We're, like we said, we're at the same point as we were last season, and I think it was probably about a month from now last year where we did the same thing, right? We'd win a game, lose a game, win two, lose two, this up one, down one. And then all of a sudden, we kind of went on a run. And I think it got to a point where either going into the All-Star break or coming right out of it, we were like 10, 11 games over 500, and then we just absolutely imploded. And I say to myself, do I see this team with what I've seen so far doing something similar? And for me, the answer is simply no. You know, last season, as shocking as it was, when you really reflect on it, like, we were scoring runs. We just couldn't hold leads. We'd lose games every game, 7-6, 8-7, whatever. And I can't say the same thing about this team. Too consistently, our bats go absolutely cold with the exception of two or three guys. And our middle relief and high leverage pitchers, very inconsistent and just can't buckle down and hold the lead. Which just leads me to believe I don't see the same thing happening unless there's something drastic that happens, which remains to be seen. But like you said, I'm not going to put the cart before the horse. We're going to learn a lot in the next couple of weeks and definitely by the end of next month. So let's see where we go from there. But that's all we got from you.
Yeah, great points. I mean, the middle relief has been really a black hole. Garrett Whitlock has not been 2021 Garrett Whitlock. I think the biggest concern there is that everybody was banking on him just automatically being a lights out two inning reliever like he was in 2021. I mean, you know, this is 4 years ago now. He suffered two or three injuries since then. And as a result of that, you know, he may just not be ever going to be 2021 Garrett Whitlock again. You know, I try to tell people that, you know, he's a Rule 5 draft pick. There's reasons why teams don't protect certain players. And I'm not saying that he's a dud. I'm just saying that, you know, don't just assume that we fleece every trade and, you know, one-up everybody. Because that's what Red Sox Twitter loves, too, is that we always seem to fleece every organization and we get, you know, the best of the best and we give them back garbage. And that's not always the case. But he's been a big disappointment. Weissert's been a disappointment. But it also seems that the guys that we should feel that are locks, they'll have a bad little run and it comes at the worst time. Like, you know, Slayton looked good tonight, but he's had some up and downs. It's just been, when he was down, it was a disaster. So there's just never been any consistency day in and day out with anybody in that bullpen. And I don't know where you go from there. What does Andrew Bailey do here? You got five or six guys that are going to be on the IL, and it just seems like, you know, Tanner Houck was one of the best pitchers in the game in the beginning of last season for the first two or three months. And look at him now. So it's like, what's been going on? What does he do here?
Yeah, no, I wrote an article about that as well. You know, Breslow and him were both brought in here because, let's face it, like, the pitching staff, the minors, or, you know, prospects, it was left barren with Heimblum, which we didn't expect. Terry talks about it all the time. He thought Heimblum was going to come in here, reinvent the wheel, and fix the pitching, and we were going to become the Rays 2.0, and that didn't happen. To Breslow's credit a little bit, he did come in here and fix, as far as bringing in some talent with pitching and drafting prospects to try and fill a barren cupboard. But as far as Andrew Bailey, I don't know what he does here, because it seems like the pitches and the things that our guys should be leveraging and that are their strengths, they do it successfully and they stray away from it in the moments where they need to stick with it. Like when they should be throwing fastballs or throwing curves or throwing splits, changeups. It's like they're getting too cute, trying to reinvent the wheel and like change the biometrics and change all these processes that we had, which seemingly worked for a little bit, but it's not working in the critical spots, not working in high leverage spots. And for Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock, they are not the same pitchers that they once were, whether it's 2021 or any other year. And, you know, I don't know what Andrew Bailey does. I also don't necessarily know what our hitting coach does either, because, you know, even with the exception of the guys that do hit in some moments, the two or three, we couldn't be any worse of a clutch hitting team. And a lot of that we've talked about, Jim, is the fact of being just so super reluctant of playing small ball when it's just so obvious in certain moments, especially when we're struggling. There's a lot to fix with this team. But I think, you know, I think we're off tomorrow. You said Friday, we've got the matchup. Crochet should be against Sale. Who are you taking?
So that's interesting, because if it was last year's Chris Sale, it would be one of the best pitching matchups for the season. He's been a little off this year, although I think his last couple starts were better. You know, I expect a good pitching performance out of both of them. If I'm a betting man, I'm probably going to go with Sale, and I'm going to go with the Braves. I just think they are a better team, and I think the Red Sox are sputtering right now. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I'm seeing for game one.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're wrong too, but I think Crochet probably holds the Braves to somewhere between 2 or 3 runs, keeps us in it. And the offense that's sputtering just doesn't materialize anything against Chris Sale, which they should. But we all know how pitchers pitch us when they come back on their revenge tours in Fenway. So I'm going to probably go with the Braves. We both agree. We think we're going to lose the series. Lucky if we get 2 out of 3. But that's pretty much all we've got for you all. So go Sox.
Oh, have a good night.